admit that if I say those words on 20 meters tomorrow morning, a whole lot of people will start screaming strong, salty words at me. I think you see where I'm going on that one, Bob. W2ILP, K2RIW.
Never true in the world, never true in regards to HF.
Okay, let's see what Bob's going to say. Wait for the beep, then watch you watch, Bob. Bob, we're hearing empty noise here. You may be hearing something on the input in your neighborhood in Comac, in Huntington. The machine is quiet, and we're ready for your transmission, Bob.
Okay, this is W2LT. And there's an awful lot of misinformation on trying to tune all-band antenna from one antenna coupler. And hams don't even try to do what they try to do in an aeronautical mobile setup, because they don't expect to get that kind of efficiency. As far as the components inside the automatic antenna coupler power amplifier, they use variable vacuum capacitors that are made by Jennings, and they have a lot of trouble with them because after a while the capacitors leak and they're no longer a vacuum, and the tuner doesn't work altogether. Very high quality capacitors. And Jennings, which is now part of IT&T, I believe, and one other company in Germany are the only ones that can make these capacitors. I'll let it drop. So, as I continue, what I see is that a lot of information that's even in the ARRL antenna manuals for all band antennas is not admitting to the fact that the antenna does not contain all the radiation resistance on all the frequencies. And one of the problems is that you can't put a 3-line watt meter on the line because you're not running at 50 ohms impedance. And here is the whole rub. We were talking about the world of electromagnetics and space. And the impedance of space is around 376.7 ohms. And that comes from U sub zero divided by epsilon sub zero, the square root. And U sub zero is the permeability of space, and epsilon sub zero is the permittivity of free space. And it's about the same for air as it is for space in a vacuum. So what we're trying to do with an antenna is be part of a transformer, an RF transformer, where we're going to get our antenna to match the impedance of space. And a lot of people don't look at it that way when they model antennas, but that's really what happens. I'll let it drop. Okay, it's really strange because it sounds like there's another station here in Comac on the same frequency. And I wonder why that happens, but it does. Anyway, another way of looking at your transmitter when you're transmitting energy is you're loading into a radiating resistance. Therefore, that radiating resistance isn't in your antenna and isn't matching the impedance of space, then some of it is somewhere else. Otherwise, coming straight out of the transmitter itself, you wouldn't get a reasonable SWR. You would get too much reflected power. We're assuming that you can tune the antenna coupler up to get your SWR close to 1, like you're getting your radiation resistance, but you're not really working at 50 ohms anymore. You're using the antenna tuner to efficiently match the impedance. But where is the impedance? Some of it is radiating on the antenna, and some of it is not. Some of it is actually heating up the box. Yes, it heats the box, and it does radiate within the box. This is a basic, in this particular antenna tuner, it is a Pi network. And the output vacuum capacitor has very little capacity. It sees mostly the inductance. It's a variable inductance and variable capacitance in this Pi network. They can measure the actual RF current going to the antenna with a thermocouple. And they can measure the RF voltage going to the antenna with an electrostatic voltmeter. They can also measure relative field strength with a field strength meter. And they know that they're losing a lot of power in the tuner, but nevertheless, they are radiating enough of a signal to communicate. So a lot of people don't realize that they are possibly to a lesser degree doing the same thing. They're being part of their antenna in the tuner. Back to you, Dick, from W2ILT.
Let me ask you a direct question now, Bob. If I took an antenna tuner, well constructed, in the manner in which Mel K2KEY has often done, and some of his are open frame type, but let me take a K2KEY antenna tuner, nice big coil, maybe it's a roll adductor from a ARC 5, a nice big air variable capacitor transmitting type. Because he's not operating at 30,000 feet, he doesn't need a Jennings vacuum variable capacitor. As long as he doesn't arc over his capacitors and they're big enough and low enough in internal resistance and milliohms or microohms, they're very efficient. So he's got a Pi network consisting of the C1 capacitor, the big transmitting capacitor, a nice big coil, and the C2 capacitor, all in a steel box. And he's connecting that to a very low loss 50 ohm transmission line going to a fairly yucky antenna. Let's assume that his antenna has a 4-to-1 standing wave ratio. Let me make it a 5-to-1 standing wave ratio, which means when half the power I send to the antenna gets reflected from the antenna. I think it's a 5.6 or 5.8 standing wave ratio. So that's how bad intentionally Mel has made that antenna in my example. So half the power hitting the antenna is reflected back through this very low loss feed line into this well-constructed antenna tuner. I know you haven't got the exact number, but I'm asking for a kind of a wag, a wild assumption guess. I'm changing the words a little bit here. And let me drop. I'm asking for an approximation. If Mel put 100 watts into that antenna tuner, properly adjusted it so that the transmitter saw no reflected power, but the real antenna on a short, low-loss piece of transmission line is really a 5.6 or 5.8 standing wave ratio. Half the power hitting the antenna gets reflected back. And we properly adjusted that low-loss antenna tuner in the sealed box. Give me a rough guess. In that environment, of the 100 watts Mel is applying to that box, I say 99 watts of it gets radiated. And that if I put my hand on the box is ice cold. I'm assuming now that he's got a good balancing device on the antenna, so there's no excess current flowing down the outside of the transmission line. I'll admit that in your aircraft environment where you had a ZEP antenna, in some cases, I'll admit that that's much more difficult. But let me go back to this particular case. What most amateurs would consider an extremely high standing wave ratio, 5.6 or 5.8, I put 100 watts in that box, I say 99 watts can be radiated. The words you have used up till now led me to believe that most of that reflected power, 50 watts of it, would be lost inside the antenna tuner box. You haven't said those exact words, but you gave me a number of words that would lead me to believe that that might happen. Please tell me what you think would happen. Give me an approximation. W2ILP, K2RIW, make sure you watch.
K2RIW Internet, this is W2ILP again. What actually happens is when we test these units on the bench, we have a WO to test them in because we don't want to radiate any of our testing. Everything is done into dummy loads. So the dummy load that's used contains the components would be equal to the complex impedance of the antenna. There's a resistor in there, there's a vacuum capacitor in there, there's inductance in there. They tie together in a way where they look exactly like the antenna. And as I said, we can show how much power is getting into that box, which is simulating the antenna, and how much power is lost in the antenna tuner. And we can also know that the antenna tuner has adjusted itself so that the output of the transmitter sees 50 ohms impedance and very little reflected power. It doesn't cause the transmitter to go into a protective mode or anything like that. I'll let it drop.
Yeah, then I got a question there, KKY.
Roger.
What's your question?
Don't worry about the question. And also, when you drop and hear the beep, even though you're hearing noises, don't worry. Just go right ahead and start transmitting again.
Okay, this is W2ILP again. And the trouble, I think, with most PMs is they're locked into the fact that they have antennas that are close to resonance. And the whole thing with antennas is if you get the antenna to load at a ham band, you could use your antenna tuner for a very slight trim to go from one end of the band to the other and get tremendous efficiency, very little insertion loss. And all you may be doing is matching. And sometimes you don't even have to do that, particularly if you're feeding a 50-ohm impedance antenna from a 50-ohm output. Now, you were talking about that you can't measure the 50-ohm output of the transmitter last week, Dick. And I'll let it drop. Intrinsically, how you measure the 50-ohm output is to understand that the maximum power transfer will occur if you have a 50-ohm load, like a dummy load with 50 ohms, and you feed it from the transmitter output. Now, if you increase the resistance of the dummy load or decrease it, you will not get as much efficient output. Because the rule is that when the impedance is matched, you have the best power transfer. So that's how you test the output of a transmitter. You can't go in there with an ohmmeter and measure it, because you would have to measure it with power on, and the only way you could do that is to also load it. If you want to get into the whole story of circuit design, the circuit design changed quite a bit when it went from vacuum tubes to solid state planar transistors. And we have to consider that the H parameters of the output stage, and that goes into circuit design, where we start thinking of the output power amplifier both as a current source and as a voltage source. I'll let it drop. And if you look inside power amplifiers, the RF power amplifiers of today, in most of these Japanese rice boxes, you'll see that there are toroids, RF transformers, and they're very highly overcoupled compared to what we had years ago when we had vacuum tubes with pi networks or series plate tanks, and we analyzed the circuit strictly for voltage. And now we have to work with voltage and current in the circuit design of the power amplifier. I'll let it drop. Last week, Wesley was talking about symbols. He was talking about the circle as a symbol. It's very interesting that the circle for current is actually two circles, which represents the current source when you're trying to draw an equivalent diagram of a power amplifier. You have to have both the current source shown and a voltage source. And the voltage source looks like a circle with a sine wave in it, which incidentally is the center of the South Korean flag, the yin and yang symbol. And there are a lot of these symbols that have come not out of nowhere, but they've come out of other cultures. And a lot of people don't realize that, because I did a lot of research at one time into that, and I was going to write an article about it. So with that, I'll send it back to you, Dick, for more comments on the antennascope.
Yeah, I do have a further question, but Mel wants to clear something up. K2KEY, go right ahead, Mel.
I just had a question about this efficiency.
The story of FWR has played the, you know, myth and hearsay and things that you read. I decided, let me do an experiment. I happen to have at one time the ideal setup for the experiment. Now, let me tell you what I had. There was an antenna that came out by a company called Neutronic. And basically what this was a rotatable dipole with a motor on it that would cover the entire 40-meter band. You could actually change the length of the antenna, drove the elements in and out. You follow so far what I'm talking about, Dick? Over.
Sure do. It sounds like a Yagi-like antenna you can buy now that is electronically tunable. It's got a bunch of stepper motors that work with two pieces of copper strip that have holes in it inside of the fiberglass tubing. Why can't I think of the name of that company? But back to you, Mel.
You're talking about stepper. Okay. What they did with this antenna, you remember the automobile antennas back in the days when you had many times the antennas could be in the front of the car or the back of the car. And you remember it had a motor that drove the antenna up and down, that so when you park so that they don't break it off on you, the antenna could go down really flush with the fender. Do you know what I'm remembering, talking about? Do you remember that antenna system, Dick? Over.
I sure do. And I think on some of those cars, every time you got in the car and turned on the key, the antenna would pop up. It was a flush-mounted telescoping antenna where the whole antenna would go below the surface of the skin of the car. It would telescope up to the right distance. And what was really going on, I think, is there was a stiff wire inside of those telescoping pieces of brass tubing. And that was being wound up on a wheel way down at the bottom. I think that's the way that worked. Is that the one you're talking about, Mel? Over to you, KQRIW.
Yes, it was not a piece of wire in the middle. It was a piece of plastic. It was a piece of plastic that wound up because I had to replace some and they broke. You know, I had it on my cars and I had to replace it. But the motor just actually, I should say, wound it. Well, they took the same idea and up the pipe, they stuck this plastic and you could change the length of this dipole, this rotary dipole by that method. You did it manual. You had to watch your SWR meter. Of course, there was no auto-tuning, no computers of the day. The antenna came out in the 60s, I believe. So I had the loan of that antenna from my friend, who now has it, I think. In fact, he told me he still got it laying in his garage, but in Florida now. Anyhow, I took that antenna on.
Okay, sir, Jay. Did we time it out, Eric?
No, somebody stepped on.
Okay, you want to make a comment, Eric? Go ahead.
Yeah. Step IR makes it vertical now. You know, they've been... It's basically a tape measure with holes in it. And a motor that drives it and rolls it up back and forth on the bottom. So, they're vertical. You can tune it to any frequency you want. It's just a matter of the length inside the plastic pipe.
Thank you, that's good to know. And Mel, I think you're going to tell me now with that Neutronics you had the ability of making it right on the right length, too long or too short. You had standing wave ratios that you had control of. And if I know you, you had an antenna tuner, and you adjusted your antenna tuner, and tell me what you found. I'm making some guesses here. K2KEY, K2RIW.
You basically got the experiment. I described the antenna. In other words, I could drive the element. It was a dipole that was adjustable. Element lane, basically. Now, I took the thing, I put it on 40 meters, and I had contact with a couple of guys regularly, and I said, I'm going to do something. I want to try an experiment. I drastically changed the length of that antenna so that my SWR went sky high. Went way up, I don't know, 4 to 1. I then switched in the Johnson kilowatt matchbox, and I reset so that now I looked at like my SWR was back to 1 to 1.5 approximately. Now, what effect should I have seen on the signal there, Cover?
I am guessing that when you transmit it into the antenna at the correct size, which is a low standing wave ratio, and you talked to your friend and said, look at your S meter, take a reading. I'm now going to make the antenna drastically wrong, too long or too short. It's going to have a high standing wave ratio, but I'm going to readjust the antenna tuner, the Johnson matchbox, bringing my transmitter back into happy 50 ohm. The transmitter thinks it sees. And now, when you transmit it that way, I am guessing your buddy said, hey, except for a little bit of extra insertion loss of your transmission line, I see the exact same S meter as before, even though your antenna is sky high in standing wave ratio. I am guessing that's approximately what you saw. K2KEY, K2RIW.
I have a short comment.
Okay, there's a man at the cigar. You're 100% right. They could not see a difference. I tried it both ways, shortening it, making the antenna so it was capacitive, minus J. I did a whole trace on trying to see what I was looking at, fool with the Smith chart, you know, my whole rigmarole. I made the antenna reductive. I did every kind of way back and forth raising the SWR with the antenna and tuner, the Johnson kilowatt matchbox in the line at that time, no difference. Without it, I took it back out of the line, set the SWR back, going directly to the rig, no change in the signal. Nobody could actually see any change in the signal. Now, if it be the case that with that high SWR, I should have seen losses in the tuner, why not? Over.
I say you saw no loss in that tuner, because as long as your feed line is low enough and long, every single smidget of that reflected power from that antenna was because of the action of the antenna tuner being re-reflected forward toward the antenna, not only being re-reflected forward toward the antenna, but be reflected forward in, toward the antenna in phase with the power that is now coming out of the transmitter, and the two were voltage-wise being summed together. And therefore, you had very close to 100% total transmitting efficiency. Again, assuming your feed line is low enough in loss, assuming your antenna tuner is moderately well shielded, and the Johnson matchbox met those criteria. Now, you did take one risk. Let me drop. And that is, if the person you're talking to who was taking the field strength readings was broadside to your antenna, no problem. If he was very close to at the end of the antenna, almost end fire, so to speak, as you change the length of the antenna, you are making a minor change in the antenna pattern. The antenna pattern became a little bit more broad when you made it short, and it became a little bit more sharp when you made it long. Therefore, because of the change in the antenna pattern, if that person was not broadside to you, he would have seen a little bit of change. What he thought was a change in power, he wouldn't be able to recognize that it's not a change in pattern unless you had the ability to rotate the antenna. So there's a fairly hard piece of evidence measured in Brooklyn, New York, by Mel, where the antenna tuner appeared to have a fairly high standing wave ratio and yet still ran at 100% efficiency. I think that's the way it should be. I can tell by the words Bob is using, he believes that it's going to have a significant amount of loss. Wesley wants to make a comment on this. N2XJN, KQRIW on the TechNet.
And then K to Dex.
Okay, Wesley and then Eric in that order. Wesley, you got it.
Okay, November 2, X-ray, Juliet, November. What do you say that about your car antenna and perfect antenna tuner? And he said that you are able to achieve 95% of efficiency. Application. Never true in HF for this kind of application. And the reason for that is that while you're driving, the antenna is bouncing. When it's bouncing, the motors, if you have, even if you have a microprocessor in it and it's trying to adjust, will never speed up to the point, and the antenna second later or half a second later is in different position. So you will never have a 95% of efficiency. What you can say about it, Dick and Tertian?
If I understand you correctly, you're saying that as I drive my automobile over a bumpy road, and sometimes the surface of the road I'm going over is sand or clay or concrete or whatever, that the real impedance of the antenna is continuously changing, therefore the efficiency of the system is changing. Is that what you're saying, Wesley, go ahead.
That is part of the story, and also part of the story is trees, wet trees, trees around, and there is all the surrounding, the metal structure, the whatever structure you have, and that makes an impact of overall efficiency of the antenna. Am I right?
It's going to make a change in the efficiency, but now we've got to talk about magnitudes. If I'm driving on a reasonably uniform road, like the Long Island Expressway, where there are very few trees around me, I do have other automobiles, but if I did a careful measurement in a parking lot of the proper setting of an antenna tuner with that whip antenna on my car at, say, 40 meters, and I do it with a wide open parking lot, I set the antenna tuner, and then I put two automobiles side by side alongside of mine and re-measure the brand new standing wave ratio in the presence of those two adjacent vehicles, like might happen to me on the Long Island Expressway. Yes, there's going to be a change in impedance, but how big? If I had a 1-to-1 before, I am guessing I would get a 1.2 afterwards. There is a change, but what efficiency am I going to get a 1.2 if I don't retune? Darn close to 98% efficiency. This is my belief of what's going to happen. Yes, if I had the whip on the back bumper of the car, let me drop, and I backed up against a great big tractor trailer truck, where now the whip is parallel to that tractor trailer truck and it's 1 foot away alongside of the whole whip. Yes, all hell's going to break loose. Now I've got a 10-to-1 standing wave ratio. You don't get that condition when driving on the Long Island Expressway, is my opinion. Now, Eric has an opinion on this. Let's see what he feels. KE2EJ, our broadcast engineer, K2LIW in the TechNet.
All right, well, I got a couple things to say. First of all, I'm tired of hearing you guys call this device an antenna tuner. Just don't tune the antenna. Okay, you know, you're a tube guy. You know what the output impedance of the tube is. I'm a transistor guy. You know, most of my stuff is like 2-3 ohms. You gotta use a Pi network and do a translation. You gotta go from one impedance to another. The antenna, whether it's resonant or not, is going to have its own impedance, and the name of the game is to match those two impedances together to get the maximum transfer efficiency out of it. So, but anything you do in the near field to an antenna is going to change the impedance. It's life, you know. I mean, if you have something that's absolutely stationary and there's nothing around it and it's purely in free state, then everything's equal. Just change one variable, and everything changes. K2IW, K2J.
Can I finish, Dick? K2KY?
You sure can. I've got two comments for Eric, but I'm going to turn it over to Mel first. K2KY, go ahead.
Barbara Thomas.
Okay, that's everybody. This is K2KY. Let me finish the story. Now, the thing that bothers me, first of all, Eric is right. That's why they never called it the Johnson kilowatt coupler. It was always the Johnson kilowatt matchbox. That's basically how it's named on the front of the panel. Now, this is a big piece of equipment, like Dick says, with big variable capacitors and coils, and they're hefty. It's a hefty box that's 18 inches wide by 18 inches deep and 18 inches high. You look at it, you think it's, a big rig, big transmitter that's all missing a couple of tubes. But I pumped into it the Collins KWS1. Let me tell you about the S1. It'll hold 1,500 watts. Key down literally indefinitely. That's a hefty piece of equipment. And I wanted to do one thing. I was talking to, a couple of guys in... one in Wisconsin, one is in Ohio, used to get together on 40. And the idea is I wanted to see after a few minutes transmitting with the high SWR, how hot do you think that the, I was waiting for smoke to come out of the matchbox. How hot do you think it got, Dick? Over.
I'm going to guess that your Johnson matchbox, the box itself ran ice cold, and if you put your hand near the SO239 connector on the output end, on the input end, you felt a mild amount of heat at the connector of the coax cable. But I'll bet everything else ran almost ice cold. That's my guess. Over to you, Mel.
Exactly. I couldn't find I found no heat at all. I put my hands on the coil after I was yakking away for a few minutes. I said, hold on a minute. I just want to look at something. Here's the lid is open. I put my hand on a coil, I felt the capacitors, I felt this, I felt that, I felt by the connectors, I looked around and said, something's got to get hot here with that kind of mismatch. Nothing warmed up, Dick, absolutely nothing. I debunked the whole situation, knocking yourself out to get these SWRs down to supposedly perfection is ridiculous. You just got to get it down to where the rig is happy, over.
From my point of view, that's a darn good piece of real evidence. Not proof, but darn strong evidence. That a matchbox, and Eric is right. To be really correct, we should call it a matchbox. However, from one point of view, it's not wrong to call it an antenna tuner. I'll go into that one later. But that matchbox must obey conservation of energy. Of all of the energy, which really means watts and seconds, of all of the energy in joules, each joule, by the way, is a watt per a second, of all the joules of energy you're continuously pouring into that antenna tuner, in this case 1500 watts, that antenna tuner can only do three things: reflect some of it back, He measured the Dizwar. It wasn't doing that. Send some of it forward. He measured those performances of what was coming out in what and what his people listening to his signal over the air were hearing. There was power coming out. And the third thing it can do is radiate it from the box. Well, it can't do that because it was a shielded box. Or four, turn some of it into heat. The box ran cold. It wasn't turning it into heat. It wasn't reflecting it. The only thing that's left is it was sending it forward. I know of no other mechanism by which an antenna tuner slash matchbox, I know of no mechanism by which a matchbox can waste RF energy without radiating it or turning it into heat. If there is no Vizwire on the input end, and if it runs ice cold,
put it short at the end, you'll get heat.
But what at the end and you'll get heat?
Short the end of the cable where your antenna is supposed to be, you're going to get some heat.
Yeah, but we're using reasonable Vizwire. A short at the end of the cable is an infinite Vizwire. There's a bunch of reasons why we shouldn't go quite that far. Up to a 5.8 Vizwire, I'm willing to go to. And with the various sizes of that antenna, that neutronics that Mel was doing, he probably hit as much as a 5.8 standing wave ratio, where 50% of the power hitting that antenna was being reflected back from the antenna back to the antenna tuner. And the antenna tuner ran ice cold. It wasn't wasting that power. His transmitter didn't see the reflected power. It wasn't going there. It had to be radiated because the people he was talking to saw the exact same amount of signal strength. You see where we're coming from here. Now, I will admit, let me drop. I will admit, Bob, that you had a much more severe environment when you were working for Collins Radio or North American Aircraft. I'm not sure which one it was at the time. But you had a much more severe environment where that aircraft had to work at, let me pick a number, 35,000 feet, where rather small voltages will arc over if you're not using something like a Jennings vacuum variable capacitor. Because of the way all volume on an aircraft is at a very high premium. In other words, quite often aircraft design is forced into very small designs, into very tight little packages and whatever. Because of the severity of your environment, and because of the transmission line you were allowed to use and whatever, I'm guessing you had various loss mechanisms in your transmitting system that Mel did not have. But the antenna tuner itself, built with good ham radio ingenuity, I say can have darn close to 99% efficiency. The direct question I asked you last time is that, do you believe I can put 100 watts into the matchbox and get more than 99 watts out to the antenna, even though the antenna has a high standing wave ratio? I'm looking for a yes or a no on that one, Bob. Do you believe that is possible, or does everything in your experience tell you that that cannot happen? W2ILP, wait for the beep, look at your watch, KQRIW.
K2RIW, W2ILP. I don't like to hear anecdotes about specific tests, especially tests where somebody is receiving a signal and you take off your linear amplifier, which could be running a kilowatt input, and go back to your trying to conserve power because hams aren't supposed to transmit more power than necessary. And the DX station tells you you can't tell the difference with the linear on or without the linear on. But we all know that the relationship is not linear because there's a logarithm involved in decibels. And if somebody's receiving a fairly small signal, they might not even notice the difference when your actual radiated power has decreased somewhat. And as far as variable antennas, I'll let it drop. I didn't work with them directly myself, but I worked with engineers who are working on trying to build variable antennas to be used on military tanks. And they soon found out that telescoping antennas would not work. because they worked fine receiving, but they became very inefficient, because no matter how you had phosphor bonds on phosphor bonds, the resistance of the antenna would change abruptly as you telescoped it. But I did see recently a ham antenna that is really in one piece. It doesn't telescope. It spirals like a screw. And it's a variable antenna. But once you're fooling around with variable antennas, as Dick said, your antenna pattern changes. And the impedance may not be a big problem, especially if you have any decent antenna coupler will turn up an antenna as far as getting an impedance match. But if the antenna is no way resonant and needs to have complementary inductance reactance, I should say, placed into the circuit in order to get the thing working, there's no question that there's heat in the box. I'll let it drop.
I want to ask a question about that. Go ahead, Bob.
I got the point, too.
I'm going to go on because this argument about antenna tuners and couplers, I came to a head when the ARRL was testing some large and expensive antenna tuners, and they were getting setups where they were getting a viswas of 5-to-1. And what happened is I was in contact with Lou McCoy, who was the lab manager of the ARRL before Ed Hare took over. And he agreed with me that they shouldn't be doing that, even though these antenna tuners, he said they're out of their mind. They're out of their mind. If they put a thermocouple in there, they'll see it heating up. There's no question about it. And it's wasting power. And unfortunately, like 3 weeks after I spoke to Lou McCoy, I still have a printout somewhere of the email. He passed away due to a brain tumor, which we don't know if it was started from RF, but that's another subject. So, back to you, Dick, from W2ILP. Go.
Comment.
Yeah, we've got Dick, Eric, and Wesley in that order. I'm going to agree with you, Bob, in one point, and that is when you do over-the-air testing, you'll have to admit that it's extremely rough approximation of a laboratory measurement, because Mother Nature's ionosphere between here and Pennsylvania or here in California or here in London can easily make the signal go up 20 dB, up and down 20 decibels in a 10-minute period. The ionosphere can change that much. If Mel was testing to a guy 5 blocks away where it was pure direct line-of-sight communication between his transmitting antenna and the other guy's receiving antenna, then I have a lot more faith in the S-meter readings. But here's my direct question one more time, Bob. Where Mel was putting 1,500 watts into a matchbox that was going into a fairly high standing wave ratio antenna, and the matchbox, after 10 minutes of key down, 1,500 watts, and then Mel turned off the transmitter, opened up the box in a hurry, and touched everything inside, and it was ice cold. If the box experienced no heating during his test, do you, Bob, believe that at that particular experiment, the box was running at, let me pick a number, 99% efficiency? Because I know of no mechanism by which a shielded box can waste RF energy without creating heat, and he found no heat at the 1,500-watt level. Do you think he was wrong to
to come to that conclusion, Bob. W2ILP, K2LIW.
K2LIW, W2ILP. I don't know the exact complex impedance that he's trying to load, and so I can't really tell you anything with numbers. But the way to test it is not to talk to a nearby station, because if the station, the receiver has any kind of dynamic range and it's getting a really strong signal, its AGC is kicking in, and who knows what it's doing. You can't measure field strength that way. And the second thing is the way that the manufacturers of large antenna couplers test their antenna couplers is to use thermocouples at various places within the box. If they don't do that, can't rate the components and say the components are capable of handling the power levels that they advertise and still support the tuning from a bad VSWR. Because even if the final tune-up lets them run fairly cool during tune-up, they may be hot. And it all depends upon what the output of the antenna tuner or matchbox or whatever you want to call it. They call it a coupler, a tuner, a matchbox. It's all the same. Its basic job is to match impedance, and it does that very well with very low insertion loss because we're on ice cold. But when it has to match a complex impedance, it may have to absorb a certain amount of power proportional to how much it has to match. Components become part of the antenna. Back to you, Dick, from W2ILP.
Okay, on that last point, Bob, I know we have among the people here somewhat of a difference of opinion. Eric, you've run with some very high power transmitters, 50 kilowatt region. You've worked with some extremely high internal standing wave ratios inside of those filters to make sure that all undesired products out of your broadcast transmitter did not get to the outside world. And I am guessing that even with those extremely high standing wave ratios, the total amount of heat created in those filters that you have used is extremely small most of the time. That, to my knowledge, there is no mechanism of wasting RF energy that does not show up as heat. There is no other mechanism. If there is no heat, there is no waste. And if you quantify the amount of heat, you know the exact amount of waste of that RF energy. That's my firmly held opinion. Maybe you have seen something that confirms that. KE2EJ, K2LIW in the TechNet.
All right, Dick. In referring to what Bob was talking about, I assume that he's talking about VHF aircraft. And one of the things that manufacturers will do in the, you know, in a solid-state transmitter, the output impedance of the transmitter is really low. And one of the things that you try to do is you try and keep the, you know, you want to have the section of the network absolutely avoid high-loaded Q factors, and what they'll do is they'll add another section. They'll double a section or triple a section, whether it's a T-network or a pi-network. In that relation, essentially those filters, those cavities that I do are like double network with very low Q. And then if you could even sense heat off of one of those filters, you're doing really good because they don't get hot. They're just designed so well. And even on certain days when, like, water gets into the antenna and stuff like that, because they're at the back end, at the transmitter end, where you're trying to get rid of the spurious stuff, it doesn't turn up as heat. So I think you really have it right. There are other things where that, you know, I'll get an impedance mismatch within in the transmitter, and what will actually start happening is those power levels, they break down. You get these you start smelling stuff, and you see these really beautiful blue arcs coming out of the back of the thing, and it's like, oh, let's shut it off real fast. But that's load imbalance. That's a whole different game. But really, the output design is the output section. Let me let it drop. They really put thought into that in terms of how to make the maximum transfer and yet keep the Q really low. Because once you make the Q really high, then you start running into all sorts of trouble, and then you will make heat.
I would agree with that. Because of the approximately five definitions of the word Q, one of those definitions is the current rise at resonance. If my circuit is running with a Q of 10, and I put one RF ampere into that circuit, somewhere in that circuit, 10 RF amperes is flowing. And depending on the equivalent series resistance of that particular component, at 10 amperes, I squared R, is the way you calculate the heat, since the amount of heating into a fixed resistor is a function of the current squared into that resistor. You can see that you don't have to go very high with the Q, where all of a sudden the voltage, the current rise due to the Q squared starts becoming a substantial amount of heating, unless your component is nearly ideal. These are a bunch of almost facts, strongly felt opinions on the subject. After Wesley tells us his opinion, I'm going to tell you something else about the word antenna tuner versus matchbox versus impedance matcher. N2XJN, go right ahead, Wesley, with your comment, K2RIW. I bet you you've made a lot of use of antenna, of matchboxes in your day. You got it, Wesley.
Yes, I did have. And before I get into that, Dick, you just forgot about one thing when you were talking about the efficiency of mobile antenna. I remember the old time in the 90s when I was using the antenna with 600 watt or I believe it's 700 watts amplifier in it. And the antenna was bouncing. Now you got to understand that the coil of that antenna most likely is 30 inches, maybe a little bit more, over the chassis of the car. Now, when you're driving, you're constantly changing the distance between your coil and the chassis of the car. The efficiency of 95% cannot be achieved. Let me drop for a moment.
But some of those loading coils, let me drop for a second. Some of those base loading mechanical springs so that the antenna can swing, some of them have a thick copper braid going down the center of the spring. So that the spring itself is not as much of a coil and therefore it can't bounce quite as bad as you're describing. I think that's a possible fix for that situation. Back to you, Wesley.
Yes, it is possible. That's why the guys with the screwdrivers came to the idea that you actually have it kind of snap, even though it is mounted to the bumper, but it's kind of snap with the plastic wrap nearby the coil. Anyhow, I'm going to give you the humoristic story. It was early 80s, where a guy had a homebrew transceiver. We didn't have a manufactured one at that time. What happened is, he came a little bit drunk. He tuned his antenna tuner perfectly. It was doing good. The antenna tuner did not get hot. I'm stressing that, did not get hot. And you know what? The people could not hear him. What happened is, he tuned his antenna with the switch, the band switch, on the wrong position, to the second harmonic of the signal. What you can say about it, Dick? And to Adrian?
I'm with Thomas.
I got a problem with that one, Wesley. If the tank circuit of the transmitter was tuned to the fundamental frequency. And modern-day transmitters have built-in filters controlling the harmonics, because by FCC standards, all harmonics out of the transmitter must be suppressed by 60 decibels. Under those conditions, in theory, on a modern-day transmitter, there is no second harmonic within 60 dB of the fundamental coming out of that transmitter. And a properly operating antenna tuner, matchbox, impedance matcher, cannot generate harmonic energy. Yes, if it's arcing over, and if it's got diodes in it, and step recovery devices and whatever, yes. But under normal circumstances, a linear matchbox cannot itself generate a second harmonic. It could only filter the second harmonic being generated by the transmitter. And a modern-day transmitter meeting FCC requirements can't make a second harmonic. You see where I'm coming from on that one, Wesley? N2XJN, K2LIW.
W2LP, the comments.
Okay, the station recognized November 2, X-ray Juliet, November. Yes, I do. Well, I would like you, Dick, just to, for some people, because you're talking about antenna tuners, and I believe there are few ham radio operators, they do not know exactly how the P filter works. Let's say we have a pi, I forget the word, whatever, you know what I'm talking about. Now, if you just state how close is antenna tuner to the amplifier, that would be interesting because you never discussed that. It's not how far away is the antenna tuner from the amplifier, but how close is the antenna tuner to the amplifier if you want to make one having antenna tuner. Back to the antenna tuner.
Yeah, Bob recognized. We're going to pick you up next, Bob. If the transmission line between the transmitter and the matchbox, and the transmission line between the matchbox and the antenna, the transmission line, if each of those are low in loss for this discussion, because if they become lossy, life becomes more complicated. So if they are low in loss, whether the antenna, whether the matchbox is 1 inch away from the transmitter or 100 feet, 30 meters from the transmitter, does not matter. I will admit that as you move that matchbox further down that transmission line, if there's any substantial standing wave ratio of that antenna, that standing wave ratio of the antenna represents a dot on the Smith chart, and at that radius you swing a circle, every one of those impedances occur somewhere along that transmission line. So the exact impedance the matchbox sees will be changing as I move it down that line, but the magnitude of the standing wave ratio, the magnitude of the reflected power, does not change, no matter where I put that matchbox. I can put it anywhere I want if I'm smart enough. And I'm not changing how well it will perform, how much efficiency it will have. All of that will be essentially the same if I do it correctly. Strongly felt opinion. I know it's controversial. But once again, Bob, I know you're going to discuss something we've already said, but the one thing I want you to tell me, is there any mechanism of loss of RF energy? Let me drop. Do you, Bob, W2ILP, know of any mechanism by which a matchbox can lose energy if it's running ice cold? Is there any method of it losing RF energy without it being a thermal loss of energy? I say no. The words you've been using up till now imply that you believe it's yes. And if you believe the matchbox can lose RF energy without creating heat, how does it do that and still obey conservation of energy? WQILP, KQRIW.
KQRIW, and then that's WQILP. You guys are getting off on tracks. Somebody said,